This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and this show is called The People Behind the PhDs. This is Dr. Z, Zachary Brooks, and welcome to part three of the interview with Dr. Katie Angus, who studies and teaches French and language acquisition and the development of language teachers at the University of Southern Mississippi in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. There's a few seconds of overlap, so we can pick up right where we're left off in The People Behind the PhDs. Excellent. So you did that. And then at this point, what? I mean, do you now know what you want to do when you grow up?
I still had no idea. I applied while I was in France. I applied to graduate programs in French and in international studies, and I got into both. And so what made me decide which program to go to was, again, finances. Mm-hmm. And I learned that if you're a graduate student in foreign language, you teach while you're at university and they'll pay for your school. So I was like, wow, I got into these really amazing international studies and foreign affairs programs in Washington, D.C., but I don't think I can put myself into debt like that, because undergrad, one of my motivating factors for finishing early was I was paying for this. Mm-hmm. I had some scholarships and in-state tuition, but the rest of it was on me. Mm. And so I was like, wait, I can go to school for free. Okay. That sounds pretty great.
Okay.
And so I ended up at Pitt again.
Okay.
Yeah.
For your master's degree.
Yep. I studied French again.
Okay.
For a master's at Pitt.
Okay. And you, at this point, you were introduced to the world of teaching assistants.
Yes.
Because you became one.
Mm-hmm.
What was that experience like?
It was so fun. At that point, so I had orientation before I teach. And I remember I was so nervous. I threw up even before orientation, not even before teaching.
Wow.
I threw up before orientation. I was so nervous. And then I went to orientation, and my teaching coordinator, she just gave so much, first of all, practical knowledge, but confidence. Uh-huh. That I felt prepared to teach. And it wasn't just a week-long orientation then. We kept taking pedagogy classes throughout the first year.
So like every week you would meet with
thing.
So every week you met with a small cohort to kind of go over some of the practices of teaching?
Right.
We had
pedagogy class, and then also we had meetings with the coordinator to be working together on how to do assessment and how to teach certain topics. And she was, her name is Dr. Heather Allen. She was probably the most influential person to me in my graduate career, because when I went to Pitt, I thought that studying French meant I had to study literature, because that's what I knew. That's the kind of classes I took as an undergrad. But when I got to work with her, I went into her office and I saw on her wall a diploma from Emory. Uh-huh. And Emory was where I was considering going for undergrad, until I decided to stick with a place that I might be able to pay for easier.
Yeah.
And be closer to home. And so I saw that she went to Emory and she studied language acquisition in French. And I was like, oh my, that's a thing. I didn't know that was a thing.
So what did you think? Like, were you sort of mystified by this phrase, language acquisition?
Yeah. So, the second semester at Pitt, we took a class with her, all the master students, and I got to start learning about what you can do with French other than literature. Like, you can learn about how people learn a language, and I got to see what her job was like, and that was helping graduate students become more competent teachers and feel more confident. And I kind of wanted to be her when I grew up.
That's yeah.
I decided. And so,
I mean, she kind of embodies what you kind of do now. I mean, there's French and there's language acquisition. Mm-hmm. And then you're interested in helping other people learn how to teach well, the teaching assistants in particular.
Yep. So she's been my mentor and even now, when I have any important professional decisions to make, I usually ask her her opinion. I really trust her, and she's so smart and honest.
Wow. The importance of mentors. So with people I've interviewed, you're the 15th person I've interviewed for this show. The importance of mentors is something I don't really go into deeply, but you're probably the 15th person out of 15 to mention at least one mentor along the way that really influenced them. And what would you say is the qualities of a mentor if someone's listening to this and say, maybe they're in college or something, and I would like to have a mentor someday. You know, what qualities do you think are key? You know, two or three qualities are key in a mentor. I mean, you happen by happenstance, sounds like, found one. But once you found this person, you realized very quickly she was extremely important for your development as a professional. What kind of things did you, in retrospect, would you say are important for finding a mentor?
Well, the things that I really liked about her was how comfortable I felt with her. Like, that I could be honest with her about what I was thinking and my goals, and that she was honest with me about, you know, what her job entailed, what I would need to do to get a position like hers or better than hers. So I think that's probably the biggest thing, is just being comfortable and being able to really speak freely.
Yeah, confidence and trust. So you finish up your master's at University of Pittsburgh. For the second time around, you've been at University of Pittsburgh. At some point, you want to do a PhD. What was obviously this professor was very helpful. Heather, you said, right? Dr.
Right.
Heather, what was her last name?
Allen.
Thank you, Dr. Heather Allen. What was your motivation then? I mean, obviously, you're thinking about a PhD. What were your thought processes at this point?
So after my master's, I took another year off. And I went to Andorra to teach English as a Fulbright teaching assistant.
Okay.
So again, related to language teaching.
Okay.
So this is now the fourth year that I've been teaching, because I had that year in France teaching English. And then I was teaching college French at the University of Pittsburgh during my master's. And then I taught English in Andorra. And so I was realizing, okay, I really do like teaching language, but also I knew I'd liked learning French, and my time in Andorra let me practice Spanish and learn Catalan. And so these experiences made me think, okay, I really like thinking about learning languages and learning them myself. And I thought, you know, going back to school to study language acquisition would help me with my passion of learning languages and let me continue to be a student for forever by being a professor.
Ah, okay. Because you knew at this point you had a clear realization. You really, really love this.
Yeah, I love languages and I love learning.
Yeah.
And so as a professor, whenever you teach a new class, you need to make sure that you know a lot about the subject. So you need to be a student yourself. And then also when you're doing research, that's just being a student as well.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic. So then you started thinking about applying to different places?
Right. So I asked Heather what were some of the best schools, and I applied to them. And I'm very fortunate that I have a choice of multiple schools. And she told me that I absolutely should accept the offer from the University of Arizona because it's one of the best programs in second language acquisition. And there were so many professors with different interests that I could study whatever part of language acquisition that I wanted.
Mm-hmm. So you decided to go to the University of Arizona to the second language acquisition teaching program to do French and language acquisition.
Yes.
So that statement sounds like very specific for some people, but within that world, there's a lot more you could actually focus on. So when you got to University of Arizona, what was your intellectual journey from going to, I like French and learning languages, to what you eventually studied?
So I think it was because of how much I like teaching, I decided to major in pedagogy and program administration.
So for people who don't know, pedagogy is what exactly?
So how languages are taught.
Okay. And then program administration?
That would be how to run a language program, and I focused a lot on how to help the foreign language teaching assistants prepare to teach.
Okay. Obviously, at this point, you enjoy that so much. And
right.
if you want to share any like two or three highlights from your time at University of Arizona, what was the things that really stood out for you? Stories. Stories are humanity's original technology. So I'm proud to carry on the traditional technology and share this story with you. Whether you're on an iPhone or an Android, whether you're on Apple, Spotify, or another podcast service, whether you're at home, in your car, at work, on public transportation, working out, or just walking around, I dedicate my shows to you. Dr. Z Productions and Podcasts, Consequential Stories for Life. You. I'm doing your PhD at University of Arizona.
Of course, the faculty were all stellar. They were so willing to help all the students. But I think my favorite part was actually the colleagues in the program, my peers, because it was a very big program. I think at the time there was maybe 70 PhD students, and it's an interdisciplinary program. So we have our hands in departments all across campus. You take classes in psychology and communication and Spanish and assessment. And so you really get a well-rounded view of what you're studying, but you also get to work with people who are interested in a lot of different things. And I think that was really special about the program.
Yeah.
Is the variety of what you study and the people that you study with.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, so what Dr. Angus mentioned is that there was a lot of people in the programs, about 75, so many PhD programs on major campuses like University of Arizona usually have maybe 20, 25, and that encompasses, you know, people who are in their first year to year six, let's say, of their PhD. So having 75 people in a PhD program at any given time is a very large program. So that's what Dr. Angus is referring to, is like this huge number of people in this program. So that's what you also liked, is just all the people in the program, and they had different interests, and you liked interacting with them.
Yes, it did create some challenges for the program, though, because when you have so many students, you need to try to find funding for them, because we're not all independently wealthy. So because we were in different specializations across campus, you know, some of us worked in the French department, some of us taught writing. At one point, I got to work as a teaching assistant for linguistics, for African-American hip-hop culture, for psychology. So I think that was another great aspect of the program, is that I got to expand my CV a lot more than some other students would have been able to,
yeah,
with just teaching French all the time.
Wow. And so you got to teach some really cool subjects. I mean, hip hop, psychology, linguistics, in addition to French teaching, right?
Yeah.
That's
and
incredible.
When I was on the job market, people asked me about those classes because it made me stand out as someone who was a bit different.
Wow. So eventually you finish your PhD. What then? I mean, do you want to be a professor at that point, or were you thinking anything international? Did you want to go back to France? What were your sort of thought processes as you were finishing up your PhD?
Well, I loved France, but I felt American at heart. Like, even though I said France is another home, like, this is where my family is, mm-hmm, here. So I knew I wanted to be in America. And so even before I was done with the PhD, I had applied for jobs when I was ABD, all but dissertation. And I had multiple offers. And I credit that to, one, the caliber of the program that I was in, and also all of these variety of experiences that I had gotten at the University of Arizona. Mm-hmm. So even before I was finished with my dissertation, I had multiple job offers, and I am so fortunate that I had the choice of where to go. And I chose the University of Southern Mississippi.
Why did you choose the University of Southern Mississippi? Because that seems like, from the outside, like a huge change from being in Pittsburgh and in Arizona and in France. It seems like a big shift, but obviously you're very happy there. What was the sort of rationale and thought process you had behind choosing this wonderful university with the beautiful live oaks?
Right. I never imagined that I would live in Mississippi, honestly. And the other offers were in great places. I mean, Washington, D.C. was really close to home. There's a lot going on there. But sometimes when you study language acquisition and you have a focus like mine of program administration, the jobs that are available are often non-tenure track, or they're for people with just masters, because some programs don't believe that you need a PhD to teach upcoming professors how to teach classes.
Okay.
So a lot of those jobs out there are non-tenure track, but Southern Mississippi values teachers. That's one of the reasons why we have that master's program in teaching languages. So it was tenure track, and everything in the job ad was really for me. It was like, are you interested in study abroad and technology and working with graduate students and teaching French classes from 101 up through graduate level, and then teaching all these model classes and pedagogy, applied linguistics, technology, and everything was for me. And actually that ad was sent to me by my advisor, Dr. Dupree at the University of Arizona. And she's like, this one is for you.
Hmm.
And I got here for my interview, and the colleagues just made me feel so at home.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really proud of Mississippi and what it has. Is it cutting off?
Yeah, so they're proud of, you said they were really proud of Mississippi and what it has to offer. Is that what you said?
Yeah, my colleagues are very proud of Mississippi and the university and the programs that we've built here. And I knew that this is a place where I could make a career.
Uh-huh.
So there was a professor in German at the University of Arizona, and he's like, that is the one that you need. That is the interview you need to put all of your energy for. And that is where you can make a career for yourself, and that's where you can make a home.
Wow. That's fantastic to get that feedback at that point, especially as you're applying, you know, get a professor who says, this is the one for you, and then another professor, you know, even sort of ups the ante saying that this is really a fantastic place for you. It's nice to get that kind of support at that point.
Yeah, I felt so, as I've used the word fortunate a couple of times, I don't think lucky is the word, because it's not luck. I've worked very hard, but so fortunate that a position opened at the right time, and it was just the right one for me. And when you go on a job interview, it's both your colleagues that are already there and you that are trying to find if it's a good fit. And it was just a perfect fit for me here and them with me.
So now that you're at the University of Southern Mississippi, as an assistant professor, what does it mean to be an assistant professor? What does your life look like?
So in my program, I teach three classes a semester, and I've asked to teach different classes each semester, so I don't have like three sections of the same one. And that's partially just to keep my life more exciting, and also so I can experience different classes and different levels of students. And then also I have research requirements of presenting at conferences, working on peer-reviewed articles, and then we do have a lot of service. So it is a lot of teaching and a lot of service. And my current big service role is that I'm coordinator of the French program and also of our two languages program, because we've gotten rid of departments. You know, a lot of universities around the U.S. are trying to restructure because of budgeting issues, trying to figure out how to save money and also change with the changing times. And so we don't have chairs anymore. So I'm working with scheduling the French program, dealing with advisement, graduation forms, a lot of the administrative work.
Okay. So final question, Dr. Angus. So if you were to talk to someone, maybe you do in your current role, who says, I want to do a PhD someday, what would you say to them?
I'd ask them what they want to do with their life with their PhD.
Okay.
Because for me, I needed a PhD to be a professor and to continue being a student.
Mm-hmm.
But for some students that I talk to, if they just want to be a middle school teacher, which are absolutely needed, but you don't need a PhD for that. So I want them to really consider what they want to do with their life, because a PhD is a big investment in time and money. So you need to make sure that it's what you really want and need for your goals.
Okay. Absolutely. And any final thoughts from you, Dr. Katie Angus?
No, I don't think so. Well, everyone should study a language. Let me put that out there.
Why should everyone study a language?
Well, there are studies out there that show that you're going to be better at multitasking, your brain is going to age better. But also, as I've talked about, the world opening to you, you can experience so many more peoples and music and just culture in general by being able to speak another language.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's certainly my experience. So, Dr. Angus, Katie, thanks so much for being on the show today. And, of course, thank Olivier, Oliver, for being a great supporter of yours today. So really appreciate him being on the show as well.
He's my number one fan.
Good. Well, have a good afternoon. We'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Talk to you later.
Bye. Thanks for listening to part 3 of the interview with Dr. Katie Angus, who researches professional development of foreign language teaching assistants and novice teachers. To continue listening, visit drz.net. That's dr-z.net. You can also follow me on Facebook at Dr. Z Podcasts and Instagram at drznet. As always, happy deciding. The People Behind the PhDs is conceived, written, produced, and edited by Dr. Z, that's me, Zachary Brooks, PhD, in Dr. Z Productions and Podcasts. Learn more at drz.net/about. That's dr-z.net/about.